The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
And now I'm joined by Donald Clark, film correspondent of the Irish Times, and Jen Gannon, freelance pop culture journalist, for this week's entertainment panel. Good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Jen, Sexy Beast on Netflix on Wednesday sounds like there are some bad dating shows out there. This sounds like one of the most awful, contrived dating shows ever, but they're really pushing it, aren't they?
Yeah, as a singleton, I have to say the stakes are getting higher for singletons who agree to go on telly. You know, you have shows trying to marry you off with someone at first sight, you know, trying to confront your exes, trying to, like, there's, you know, having your nether regions judged, like a sausage dog at Crufts. So the romantic lives of the unattached have become a circus sideshow. So this is going the whole hog, literally. And I think the most disturbing thing about Sexy Beast is not that the fact that it's a show that has stupid giant heads.
So what is it? What
people.
Is the gimmick?
Basically, it's poor single contestants are covered in makeup, in prosthetics, and to make them look like various animals. So you have someone who's a dolphin, or someone who looks like a dog or a beaver. And really well thought out. But the thing is, it's not even an original idea. This was on BBC Three in 2015, and Netflix have just adapted it. So I suppose, you know, for people who maybe looked at The Masked Singer and found the dance in Savoy attractive, this might be something for them. But like,
and the idea is that you're not judging the person.
You're not
based
supposed
on their
to be
looks.
Judging the person by their looks. So you're just getting to, these people go on dates and they get to know each other as, without the distractiveness of beauty, apparently. But then, you know, when
they've got the prosthetics on for the whole
date. The whole thing. And then at the end of it, they have to decide whether or not they want to actually see the person's face at the end of all this.
Okay.
Their generic, beautiful face, no doubt.
Do they have to decide before they see their faces if they like them or not?
At the very end, they just choose whether or not they want to pursue a relationship with this person. So, I mean, look, I just think we're so starved for any kind of romantic situations post like lockdown that I think any dating show is a good idea.
It's going to be a
just
smash
put
it.
Two people together. Yeah.
Okay.
We don't need the distracting heads.
Donald, also on Netflix, tell me about the Fear Street trilogy. Netflix seems to be obsessed with kind of the films that were around when we were kids in the 80s, aren't they?
Everyone's obsessed with the films that were around when you were kids in the 80s. and I was at university. I suppose perhaps this happens with every generation, is that at some point the films that people enjoyed whenever they were kids suddenly get reinvented and restructured. This is a strange variation on this. I mean, I quite liked it. I thought it was interesting. Okay. I thought it was ambitious. But I mean, the point you make is interesting, is that you're positioning it as a project, given that it's a, if I may summarise briefly, it is a trilogy of horror films which have been released weekly, which a large part of the justification for is playing with, riffing on, offering meta takes on horror films of the 1990s and 1980s. But at the same time, it is based on a series of YA novels by R.L. Stein, who is a mega-selling author of Goosebumps, one of the best-selling authors in the world. I mean, it's one of the interesting points that, you know, who's the best-selling author
Goosebumps
in the world?
Goosebumps is young adult stuff, is it?
Yeah. And the Fear Street series are obviously a little bit older, but they're still essentially aimed at young adults, the Fear Street series. They're a series of horror films for adolescents, put it that way. But I mean, I'm always reluctant to sit back and use that rather pompous critic's phrase, who is this thing for? Who exactly is it for? But, I think ultimately, you know, if something works, it'll find its audience. But I did frequently, during these three films, sit back and ask myself that question quite genuinely. Because, as I say, they are based on these books that are aimed essentially at adolescents, at young people, at teenagers. Yet, there's an enormous amount of drug taking, quite pneumatic sex, and, you know, impromptu, vicious, bloody disemboweling throughout these films. A lot more than you'd expect from, for example, a Harry Potter adventure. And that puzzles me slightly. I suppose, just to summarise, it's impossible to summarise it because it's a huge story that stretches over, 4 hours. But it begins, there are three films, the first of which is set in the 1990s. The second of which is set in the late 1970s, and the third of which, in a dramatic shift, is set in 1666 during the witch trials of that era that is more sort of, it's more the Crucible than it is Witchfinder General. The 90s obviously is a play, almost goes without saying, the 90s episode is a play on the Scream films. So already you're in quite deep meta territory. So this is a meta film based on a meta series of films. You then go back to in this town, which is apparently being possessed and damned by a witch several centuries earlier. You then move back to a camp in the late 1970s, where there is a knife wielding villain out, which obviously isn't nod towards the Friday the 13th films. So again, I'm thinking, well. Yeah, I mean, I can see, obviously, there's a Stranger Things dynamic here, but it strikes me, and I could be wrong, younger people could tell me otherwise, that the films of Steven Spielberg and the adaptations of Stephen King and the books of Stephen King are more kind of in the popular consensus than films like Friday the 13th are, which does seem like something from a previous generation.
Donald, I feel sorry for you. Because you're a film critic, you've tied yourself in knots here. You enjoyed it. Just go with it.
Let me move on from it then. Under myself and say, actually, to be honest, really all this stuff is just sort of the brine through which the sharks swim. I mean, it actually doesn't really matter that much. It's a pretty good story set in three generations. The one thing I would say, and this may touch on something we're going to talk about in a minute as well, the last part does this really weird aspect to it. It's set in this Puritan community in 1666, and they're all talking in terrible Irish accents. Which has no explanation. No one has an Irish name. There's no kind of reference to the old country. But they seem to have decided that the Puritans were substantially Irish. Okay. Were they?
The Irish were Puritans, I know. But I suppose the actual Puritans weren't Irish. Okay.
The Puritans weren't Catholic. So that sort of baffled me a little bit.
Yeah, but anyway, we were puritanical in our own way. Okay. But anyway, look, you enjoyed it. And I've racked up a load of breaks here. So Donald Clark and Jen Gannon, bear with me a minute. We'll take another quick break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Donald Clark and Jen Gannon are with us and we're talking about things to watch next week. And Jen, We Are Who We Are, this is something that's been shown before on other channels, but it's starting on RTE 2 on Wednesday at 11:45. And let's talk about it, because you say this is one of your TV shows of 2020.
It was. It definitely was. And I think it's just such a nice opportunity for people that may have missed it the first time around, because it did kind of fly under the radar, to actually give it the time and space that it needs. And it's Luca Guadagnino who directed Call Me By Your Name, and it's his first foray into TV. And I think he has this innate ability to capture like the youthful mindset in a way that Sofia Coppola does so well. And I think like on the surface, it's about an 8-part drama about the trials and tribulations of these US teens living on an army base in Italy. And it's so much more than that, though. It's about identity and how you sculpt your identity during your teen years, and how important being an individual is at this time. And so it's the story of this fashion obsessed young guy, Fraser, who's from New York, and he's whisked to Italy by his mother, who is Sarah, played by Chloe Savini, who's a general, and he's really resentful living there. He doesn't want to be dragged away from his friends, and this is just boiling over into this stew of hormones. But then he eventually becomes friends with his neighbour, Kathleen, who likes to call herself Harper sometimes and poses as a boy when she's away from her close group of friends. And the two form this bond. They're outsiders in this very strange artificial environment. And the show is about their discovery of themselves, their friendships, their identity, their sexuality and their first experiences with love at this very confusing time.
Lovely, yeah. And presumably shot like a gorgeous indie film.
Dreamy, sensual, very emotional. The young actors are just so convincing and really natural, and I think it just reveals itself with every time you watch it, something new seeing it.
Great tip there. We Are Who We Are, RTE2 Wednesday at 11:45 p.m. Okay, now Donald, you were talking about cod Irish accents earlier, so the film industry is launching another assault on Irishness. When I see a film is set in Carlingford, I think it's either going to be amazing or the opposite. So tell us about Finding You on Sky Movies.
Yeah, I know Carlingford quite well, so it was quite nice to see Carlingford playing itself in this film. Look, we do get a bit pompous about depictions of Ireland. I may mention a film which I think actually I discussed on this show when it was eventually streamed, called more than once called Wild Mountain something. It's slipped my mind. Anyway, that film we went bananas for, and it generated more column inches from people who hadn't even seen it, I suspect, half the time than, you know, Black Widow or Fast and Furious did. And it was terrible, and it was enormously patronising, and it is kind of infuriating this stuff still happens. But I think maybe we get a little bit carried away about these patronising depictions of Irishness from American studios. This isn't so bad. I mean, it's stupid. I mean, it concerns a young American violinist who travels from New York to Carlingford with a mind to bolstering an Irish studies module that she's doing to help her get into a music school, if that all makes sense. And on the plane, she encounters this movie star who is shooting a kind of Game of Thrones-style film in the area of Carlingford. As ever in these things, there is this notion that if you travel to Ireland, that you gain a kind of wisdom through the kind of mystical chatters that you hear in every street corner, and undoubtedly you'll encounter a sort of Patrick Bergen type, who in this case is actually Patrick Bergen, in a battered hat and a violin, a fiddle, I should say, who's going to grant you a sort of wisdom. I mean, like,
excellent.
You know, I mean, it was bizarre. I mean, people don't make films about people travelling to, I don't know, Norway and discovering wisdom whenever they're wandering around Oslo.
They discover kind of a bleakness and maybe a murder when they're in Norway. Everyone has their stereotypes, yeah.
Yeah, but they seem to believe it. But, you know, that said, it's silly, it's a little bit patronising, but it's nowhere near as ludicrous as Wild Mountain Time.
Your bit for the poster for this film is not as bad as Wild Mountain Time, basically.
Yeah, I would also add, I mean, as a cautionary kind of ad, if what you're seeking out is something to get, like, you know, recreationally furious about, which I think is what a lot of people sought Wild Mountain Time for, you're probably going to be disappointed. I mean, you'll find things to laugh at, but it's really not that outrageous.
Okay, not worth an outrage watch.
Yeah, so, on Sky Movies, would you say? If you are interested, on Sky Movies.
Okay, Jen, can you do in treatment quickly for us, and then I'm afraid I have to take another break, but it's coming back for its fourth seasons on Sky Atlantic and Now TV
on Monday.
Yeah,
so this is a brand new start for the HBO series. It's in its fourth season. So the first three series, you had Gabriel Byrne as psychologist Paul Weston, and now it's returned to Orange Is the New Black actress Uzo Aduba. She's playing a psychologist, Dr. Brooke Taylor, and the format is the same setup as it previously was. You're watching each patient session taking up a single episode, and then they return at the end, like in about 2 or 3 weeks after, to have group
sessions. I kind of gave up on it before at season one, but this sounds more interesting in that the sessions, the people coming into the sessions are grappling with
COVID post, so I mean, like, you have to, like, a lot of it is dealing with the changes in our lives from the past year, and I think compared to how other TV shows have been responded to the pandemic, this really, the therapy session construct actually feels like the most realistic way to talk about what has been happening. Yeah. And she has been earning rave reviews for her depiction. She was nominated for an Emmy. So it really is an uptick, they're saying, in the show. And it does mean that you don't have to have watched previous seasons to jump in on this. So
super.
I do think it's going to be worth the watch, definitely.
Okay, so that's in treatment, Sky Atlantic, Now TV, Monday, 9 p.m. Let's take another quick break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Donald Clark and Jen Gannon still with us. And we just have a couple of minutes to discuss, firstly, the very unlikely fact that, Donald, you're a fan of, is it called Ted Lasso? I see it there on Apple and I have no inclination whatsoever to watch it. But is it good, yeah?
I liked it. There's sort of a school of American comedy now that, you know, isn't hilarious, but it's funny enough. And it's not, you know, all that moving, but it's kind of reasonably touching. It's for a television that you can have on in the background that soothes you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of things like Superstore, maybe even Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which, like, despite being a cop show, is kind of built in that area. And it sort of spoils springs from the Parks and Recreation generation, I suppose.
Uh-huh.
And the latest example, and probably the supreme current one, is Ted Lasso. Plausible, it's charming, it's utterly lightweight. It doesn't really make any sense. An American football coach is, with little knowledge or even the rules of soccer, is hired to coach this failing Premier League team in leafy Richmond, of all places, which apparently something similar did happen to Chester City, I find in my researches, but it didn't happen like this. And it soon transpires that he has been hired to ensure relegation, in a plot line that popped up in Rumpel the Bailey in various places, the expert who's hired to fail. I mean, it's there. One could really get plenty of digs at it from perspective of, you know, of coming from the sports perspective, I mean, it doesn't make any real effort to convey the texture of English football. On this evidence, the fans are
you
all
see,
the
you're
right
overthinking
foot.
Again, Donald. It's watchable.
Yeah, spicy,
it's watchable is what you're saying to us.
It's,
okay.
But it is very, very pleasant. And it really, okay. it flows over you in a very pleasant fashion. Not least because of Jason Sudeikis in the lead, who's really wonderful.
Okay, well, you know what? I've never been inclined before, but if it's good enough for Donald Clark, maybe it's good enough for me. It's also good enough for Jen Gannon, I believe, Jen.
Yeah,
that,
I mean, I never really liked Jason Sudeikis. I always thought he was part of that laddish kind of Judd Apatow style comedy that I thought was really reductive, but this is so different. He's just like a human care bear in this, and it's a really comforting watch because you know that things are going to turn out okay in the end, and it's populated by people who are actually trying their best, and we have so much anxiety based comedy out there that this, you know, it can get overwhelming.
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is just a welcome antidote to all of that.
Okay,
definitely.
All right, absolutely. So that's Ted Lasso. Season 2 is dropping on Apple TV on Friday. Jen Gannon and Donald Clark, thank you very much. I'm going to send you off on a poetic note today. There's a text here from Eugene. Every time I listen to Tony Bates, I feel like I'm listening to a man who's been looking through my wardrobe and is picking out the clothes I should be wearing. Everyone has the things within themselves to deal with the changing world, but he helps to nudge you towards them. Thank you for that, Eugene. Enjoy the rest of the weekend and enjoy the weather, everybody. And that's all we have time for today. Just a reminder, you can listen back to all the items from today's show on our podcast at rte.ie/Brendan, and Tony Bates' notes will be there as well. Today's show was produced by Owen McLaughlin. Research was by Kieran Dunn and Katrina McFadden and Michelle Brown. Bridget Nicholas was our broadcast coordinator. Patter Carney was on sound. Anne Farrell is the series producer. And I leave you today. It's not often we have the weather for the Beach Boys, so let's take it home today with the Beach Boys.